five things or we will burn down your railway stations on a regular basis, you know, is not going to end happily anywhere in the world.
There are those not in favor of the continuing Hong Kong protest. This is Friday, November 15th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, you'll hear from a Hong Kong-born student having trouble with mainland Chinese students while in the United States. We have an examination of day one of impeachment proceedings against President Trump. And a temple where a mosque once stood is quite controversial in India. All on today's VOA Asia. Hong Kong's pro-democracy protest entered a new, more violent phase this week following the death of a young protester. VOA's Bill Gallo reports on how the semi-autonomous Chinese territory's 24-week-old protest movement is changing.
Hong Kong's protests may be smaller these days, but they're more violent, more frequent, and more unpredictable. Police crack down faster and firmer than ever. Last week saw the first death of a student protester. But 5 months in, Hong Kong's leaders still refuse to give in to the protesters' political demands.
I'm making this statement clear and loud here. That will not happen.
This week has seen an increase in hardcore protesters destroying public infrastructure. Pro-Beijing businesses or individuals have also been attacked. In some neighborhoods, the fight between police and protesters now resembles a battle for territory. The more aggressive tactics could be an attempt to reclaim international attention, says activist Edward Yu.
Right, for such a small city, trying to fight against an authoritarian regime, so we need international support, which properly can explain why in the past 4 days protesters in Hong Kong insist to have a stronger say and would like to have more severe action so as to arouse international concern.
Even with the more aggressive tactics, polls suggest the protesters still have widespread public support. But the violence isn't without critics.
Demanding five things, or we will burn down your railway stations on a regular basis, you know, is not going to end happily anywhere in the world.
Steve Vickers is the former head of the Royal Hong Kong Police Criminal Intelligence Bureau.
This movement has come off the rails and is really out of control. And the violent element of it, or the sharp end of it, are destroying the message that the rest of them had established through large demonstrations, which were peaceful.
But many argue peaceful protests weren't working, and with China's authoritarian Communist Party closing in, many protesters have decided they won't give in without a fight. The problem is only made worse by Hong Kong's inaction, says former lawmaker Emily Lau.
We are calling on everybody to calm down, to dial down, to de-escalate. But to do that, the Hong Kong government has to give something. You cannot just tell them, oh, you are protesters, go home. I'm not going to give you anything. Crazy. Look at the way things are. They're not going to react.
Both sides turning more violent, with no solution in sight. Bill Gallo, VOA News.
Hong Kong residents endured a fourth day of traffic snarls and mass transit disruptions Thursday as protesters closed the major arteries and rail networks while police skirmished with militant students at major universities. Life in the city of 7.5 million people has been under strain as thousands of commuters were unable to make it to work, and the government appealed on Thursday for employers to show flexibility. Riot police fired tear gas during standoffs with students at Polytechnic University. Militant protesters have hurled gasoline bombs and thrown objects off bridges during clashes at university campuses this week. Chinese universities suspended classes for the rest of the year, and others asked students to switch to online learning. Stay with us on VOA Asia. Up next, a conversation with a student from Hong Kong in the United States facing heavy opposition from other students from China. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voaasia.com. Two U.S. senators have begun an effort to get quick passage of a bill that would require the U.S. to verify whether Hong Kong should continue to receive special treatment by the United States. Pakistani security officials say they've arrested two suspected members of the Islamic State group in a raid on their hideout in the eastern Punjab province. China showed off its Mars spacecraft during a landing test Thursday as that country pushes for inclusion in more global space projects. Exiled Cambodian opposition leader Sam Rainsy arrived Thursday in Indonesia to meet some of the country's lawmakers as he considers when and how to make his long-promised return to his homeland. This is VOA Asia. Francis Hui is a journalism student at Boston's Emerson College. She's from Hong Kong, and while home as a teenager, she took part in organized protests there. Well, while riding a bus recently in Boston, a passenger asked her where she was from. She replied, Hong Kong. She says that enraged the passenger, who insisted that she should define herself as from China, adding, you are Chinese, you need to fix your identity. We said she felt insulted. Identity is really personal, she says. It's my thing. As an aspiring journalist, she wrote an article in the college newspaper entitled, I am from Hong Kong, not China. She opened with the line, I am from a city owned by a country I don't belong to. The article went viral, and so did reaction to what she had written. I spoke with her via Skype Thursday afternoon.
The whole school read it, because it's on the paper. So at first I got a lot of, you know, positive comments from my friends. But then mostly all the negative comments or like the backlash are from the Chinese international student community. And it starts circulating in their chat groups. And then at one point, three of the journalism students from China decided to write, a response, like a letter to the editor in response to my article, saying how my article is biased, some of the information is not true. And I find I think it's a good way to, you know, it's a good approach to write in response to my article instead of having, you know, a very crazy confrontation. I think it's a good approach. At one point, I remember it was at night that I got, I saw someone shared my article on Facebook, and his profile changed his profile into, with like the Chinese national flag, and then his bio line says like, no matter how far, like whoever opposes my greatest China, no matter how far they are, they must be executed. And I know that it's like right away, I know that he's referring to me because he changed that after my article was published, and he did all the changes, like the, you know, the Chinese flag and all those things, and he shared my article after my article was published. So I was very, you know, knowing that that person is an Emerson student really give me a panic. It's because I know like Emerson is a very small school, and we also have like mutual friends.
Have you heard from other Hong Kong natives who are in the United States about similar situations?
Yeah, I think it's actually really usual that, you know, students from Hong Kong or Taiwan, they got their friends or like their classmates opposition because of what they talked about the political situation in between. But it's not very usual that it gets to a point that you would get, you know, death threats or that much, you know, hate comments. But definitely I have heard of people sharing their stories, and they often feel really frustrated, and they don't, you know, dare to speak up again because of these kind of passive aggression, I guess.
Well, do you think it's organized, this opposition to you?
I mean, specifically, in my case, I know that they talked about me in, you know, a very big chat group, like online group. But I wouldn't say, you know, they organized it to, you know, make me feel bad. But definitely they are a very bonded, you know, community that, you know, they all feel the same when they saw my article, I guess.
Have you been in touch with other the people who support the protest or have taken part in the protest and have received the kind of backlash that you have?
So in August, I organized a rally, and it was totally under a great threat. You know, us as a collective group was totally under a great threat from doing this rally, and we got counter protest on the other side. Somebody from the crowd, like from the counter side, coming to our side and try to destroy our stuff. They push our audio system, and then one of the guy even tailed me back to school after the rally. So I would say it's like something constantly happening to the Hong Kong community.
Frances Wee is a journalism student from Hong Kong studying at Boston's Emerson College. Happening now in Asia, the International Criminal Court has approved a request to launch an investigation into crimes committed against Myanmar's Rohingya Muslims. The court said Thursday it approved a request from ICC prosecutors to examine acts that could be designated as widespread or systemic crimes against the Rohingya. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOAsia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. The impeachment inquiry involving President Donald Trump moved into an important new phase this week, public hearings. Opposition Democrats believe Trump abused his power by pressuring Ukraine to investigate a political rival, Democratic presidential contender Joe Biden. They hope the hearings will sway public opinion to support their case against the president, just as Republicans are counting on an aggressive defense to move the public to oppose the impeachment. VOA's national correspondent Jim Malone has more on the political stakes in the impeachment battle from Washington.
Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Two veteran U.S. diplomats, George Kent and William Taylor, were front and center as the impeachment hearings began. Taylor said the White House held back military aid to Ukraine for a time as part of a pressure campaign by the president to demand investigations into rival Joe Biden.
To withhold that assistance for no good reason other than help with a political campaign made no sense.
Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff said that alleged conduct fits the constitutional standard of high crimes and misdemeanors that warrants impeachment.
Is this what Americans should now expect from their president? If this is not impeachable conduct, what is?
Republicans said the witness testimony about the president's actions was second and third hand, and that Ukraine eventually got the military aid. Congressman Devin Nunes said the impeachment inquiry is part of a long-standing Democratic plot to bring down the president.
Anyone familiar with the Democrats' scorched earth war against President Trump would not be surprised to see all the typical signs that this is a carefully orchestrated media smear campaign.
Trump has repeatedly said the Democrats have no case.
There's never been a president who's been so transparent. This is a witch hunt at the highest level, and it's so bad for our country.
Democrats hope that the televised hearings will build public support for their case against the president, says legal analyst Susan Lowe Block.
This is not a situation where the House and the Senate would remove someone because they don't like him. That would be wrong, and that's not what is at issue here. But it is also, at the same time, a political process that has to have the public behind them.
Public opinion polls show the country remains deeply split on the impeachment issue, says analyst Ramesh Ponuru.
I think it remains to be seen what impact impeachment is going to have on the 2020 election. Right now, it is just solidifying the opinions of supporters of each party.
As the hearings move on, Democrats will need to build a bipartisan case for impeachment, says analyst John Fortier.
For a president to be removed means that both parties, a significant part of both parties, have to agree to that. And so I think for Democrats, they're going to want to see a lot more movement in public opinion. Maybe that will happen over the course of investigation, but it certainly hasn't moved tremendously.
I have never been a quitter.
Richard Nixon resigned the presidency in 1974 when his support plummeted in public opinion polls.
I want it to be legal without being particularly helpful.
Bill Clinton survived the Senate impeachment trial in 1999 when much of the public rejected Republican efforts to remove him from office. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up, we'll tell you what happens when a temple replaces a mosque in India. You're listening to VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news alert from VOA Asia. China said Thursday it's in discussions with the United States on the first phase of a trade deal that could include a rollback of tariffs. Commerce Ministry spokesman told reporters in Beijing the tariff cancellation is an important condition for an agreement. This is VOA Asia. We continue now. A recent Supreme Court verdict has permitted Hindus to build a temple in a town in northern India on a spot where a 16th century mosque was torn down by a mob in 1992. While some hope the judgment on one of the oldest and most contentious disputes between India's majority Hindu and minority Muslim communities will pave the way for reconciliation, others fear it has heightened a growing sense of insecurity in Muslims under a Hindu nationalist government.
People go about their business as usual in New Delhi's largest Muslim area in the wake of a court verdict that gave Hindus the go-ahead to build a temple in Ayodhya town on a site contested for decades with Muslims. Residents hope the ruling will contain communal tensions fueled by the bitter dispute. But among some Muslims, there is disappointment and a sense of resignation.
We have accepted it. There is no point in objecting. Those who have the power will get their way.
The kind of atmosphere prevalent in the country today, Muslims do feel a little suppressed.
For Hindus, building a temple on the site where a mosque once stood in Ayodhya fulfills a long-cherished dream. They believe it is the birthplace of their god, Ram. But for Muslim groups, the court order that allotted Muslims an alternative plot of land did not ensure justice for the desecration of their mosque.
That is another sacrilege of the masjid, in fact. That for all the times to come, you are taking away our right. But still, the order is like this. And to put the salt on our injuries, you are saying that 5 acres land you take. Did we ask?
Delivering a verdict that would satisfy both Hindus and Muslims in India's most bitter dispute was never easy.
It's taken into account fact and law, but it's also taken into account history and the social setup and politics and the current environment in the country, and done a very fine balanced act.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi has downplayed the legal victory for Hindu nationalists, calling it neither a win nor a loss for anyone.
In the new India, there should not be any place for fear, bitterness, and negativity.
Some are heeding that message and hope that his government focuses on bread and butter issues at a time when a sagging economy is hurting many.
There is no point in Hindus and Muslims being entangled any longer in this temple mosque issue. People are scrambling to manage their day-to-day lives.
But for Muslim leaders, the challenge is to ensure that Modi's Hindu nationalist government does not follow a Hindu-first agenda in the country, also called Rashtra.
We are not a Hindu Rashtra. We are not a Muslim Rashtra. We are a secular Rashtra. And secularism is we have the fundamental right.
That is what Muslims are calling for. Security and equality for their future generations. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
This news break from VOA Asia. North Korea Thursday said the United States has proposed a resumption of stalled nuclear negotiations in December as they approach an end-of-year deadline set by North Korean leader Kim Jong-un for the Trump administration to offer an acceptable deal to salvage the talks. All the big stories come your way on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Thailand's ban of three toxic farm chemicals comes amid mixed reactions from workers and lawmakers. The National Hazardous Substances Committee voted to put herbicides glyphosate and paraquat and insecticide chlorpyrifos on the market to on the category of banned chemicals starting December 1st. But it remains unclear what the farmers will use to replace these commonly used chemicals. Steve Sanford has more from Chiang Mai.
Thailand's use of pesticide has intensified in recent years and poses a major health risk among farm laborers, who comprise 40% of the workforce in Thailand. In a move to improve safety standards, the government voted in favor of banning three applicants, including glyphosate, commonly known as Roundup, which is already banned or restricted in 19 countries.
The people who are suffering and affected from the pesticide right now are all of us, including unborn babies.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture requested a delay in the ban, citing lost revenue from U.S. exports and studies that claim the weed killer is safe as instructed. While most workers, like Kamkap Gao, realize the dangers linked to the toxic chemicals, there remains bigger questions of what happens next.
If they really want to ban it, they have to find a safe replacement for us first. Who wants to risk their lives? I don't want to risk my life when I spray the pesticide. It will harm my health and make me work longer hours. The government needs to help us find a replacement, not just come to ban it and abandon us.
As consumers become more health conscious, demand for organic produce has grown, but monitoring standards remain poor in the chemically dependent industry. Still, many see the move as a positive step forward to improve health levels of farm workers and their families.
The thing that's more important is knowledge. How to stream the knowledge that to the farmers. Yeah, for us, we want to do our farm first. But in the future, if we could turn the farmers around our area to be the organic farm, or at least they start to use less chemical.
As Thailand implements the ban, there remains an urgent need to find less toxic alternatives in a region where the environment is rapidly changing. Steve Sanford for VOA News, Chiang Mai, Thailand.
This is Science in a Minute.
A Northwestern University-led team of scientists recently developed a method that may help determine if an exoplanet can actually support life. The technique checks a planet's habitability by combining 3D climate modeling along with atmospheric chemistry. To determine a planet's habitability, the new tool measures radiation emitted by the star as well as the rotation rate of the planet itself. The researchers found planets orbiting stars emitting a lot of ultraviolet radiation lose much of its liquid water to vaporization, while planets around stars with low levels of UV radiation tend to preserve their supplies of water. It was also found that even planets with livable surface temperatures could be inhabitable if surrounded with thin ozone layers. This would allow the planet to be bombarded with dangerous levels of UV radiation. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Thank you so much for joining us for VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day and week ahead.